See if you can get a Facebook page for your team or for your new company and post it on there. That's where charity things should go.
I don't know if we have a LinkedIn pay or a Facebook page. I'll ask Courtney about that. Do you guys know if we have a Facebook page?
I don't think we're Facebook.
Okay.
You should. And use it just for charity stuff.
Maybe we'll bring that up tonight at the meeting.
If yeah, people blow
Facebook
off. Yeah.
Only people. For charities from HFG Group. It may not be a bad way.
It's a really good way because, look, what you want is the algorithms to work when they Google you.
Okay.
And people say, well, I don't want to be on Facebook. Well, that Facebook has two sides. One is the business side for trying to be LinkedIn. And the other side is, you know, the social side. Okay. So go to the business side of Facebook and put in your charitable work only for the whole group.
And does John Price take care of that? I know he does it for LinkedIn, but does John Price also do that for Facebook, guys? Do you know that answer?
I don't know.
I don't think it's a bad thought. All they do is tell us no, so we got nothing to lose if he doesn't do it and if they don't want to do it, or if Courtney doesn't want to do it or John Price can't for whatever reason. You know, once
right.
again, it's only good. There's nothing bad that can come from it.
Right. And then when they Google you, they will get, you know, your probabilities are coming up improved by 100% versus just LinkedIn.
And they're only seeing our charitable endeavors from 20 people.
That's right. And so they see your personal life, but your personal life is one of giving. And so that makes you that much more attractive when they're Googling you.
Okay. I'll mention that today at 4:15.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is your brand is determined by your image. And you can enhance your image by presenting what you're really doing. If nobody knows what you're doing.
True.
And if you have 20 people, just think how many boards you guys are on, how many different events are going on that people are giving money to and are active in, and are all those listed, and are they all being memorialized on Facebook? I wouldn't want to do that all on LinkedIn, but you could, but LinkedIn is more just for business.
Okay.
So it's all marketing. It's all about marketing, branding. So what's on your mind today?
I'll go, Rob. I'm going to add my first anniversary for a referral to my list is Ryan helped me close a small piece of business on Friday. But it was one that came from a client of mine that we got. It was kind of a walk-in. But I actually went and visited with these people towards the beginning of the year, and they're real estate investors, and the real estate market is really tough. And so they didn't go with me towards the beginning of the year, and they circled back last week and said, hey, we'd like to see if you still can put our money in the market. And so I asked Ryan to join me, and we've got them onboarded. So, and again, it's a referral from one of my quote unquote, you know, pain in the butt clients, that actually love me, which is weird. They took their money out in, March of 2020 out of one of their accounts and left it in the other two. And so I remind them on a constant basis that look at your other accounts and how well they're doing compared to the one where you made me take your money out of the market. Isn't it doing just fine? And again, they sent me a referral. So it's pretty cool.
It's great. Way to go. Congratulations.
Thanks. But yeah, you know, on the day of funding and opening, I'm putting in a year ahead to call my referrer and thank them for that. And I'm actually in the process of sending out a thank you letter. They're in Canada because they do split time. But when they get back, they'll see it and they'll appreciate it.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, you want to do both, you know, the referrer and the referee, and stick it on that calendar. And then, you know, even if you can't go back, just keep doing it from here forward. Great.
Right.
Ryan, how about you?
I did one as well with the...
Oh, good, Larry.
But the the reality is it doesn't really matter the date, you just have to do it. Because once they give us a referral, and then the referral, well, I had one date for the original stuff, then I had another date for the IRA, then it was a third date for the joint account, and then I just was speaking to her that quarter, called her, and needed, basically said, hey, it's also the anniversary, and just kind of went, you know, thank you again for that. You know, I really appreciate that. They're lovely, you know, kind of pass it on and butter her up a little bit. And then she says, oh, yeah, I'm always thinking of you, you know, and then, to give it the warm and fuzzy and see if something else comes from it. The bottom line is that you just have to kind of pick the date, because that's when I was calling her. And it didn't coincide, but make it coincide.
Right. Yeah, I would just say to pick the first date that they opened the first account.
Yeah.
And because I'm already in the circuit here, anytime I get them, I'm just, as part of my onboarding process, I'm just throwing it in. And so I don't have to go back and do whatever.
Right. Out. And that would be the same date for both of them. You know. Because the person that referred you, if they never opened the account, you wouldn't have anything to thank them for. So use that for the date they opened the first account for both the referring person and the client. Makes it simple, and you don't have to chase around 15 dates. and you know, again, it wouldn't be. And I'm not a big believer in thanking people for accounts that never opened. Okay, so this would be the only way I'd do that, is if we finally did actually open the account. But good, Larry, thank you. That makes, you know, it's one of the more frustrating things for me is giving ideas that work and people don't take them. It's like, why? Why wouldn't you use that? So, I know, it's just getting around to it, right? It's just, we used to actually hand out a thing that you put your coffee on. It was called a round to it.
Okay.
When you get, I'll do that when I get around to it. Here's a round to it. So, Ryan, are you managing money today, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm living in a world of multitasking now, Rob. I'm like, things are good. They're real good. And, I'm going to need a round to it, tattoo on me. So, you know, I mean, today I've spent a good amount of time trying to get some new business going with another group that's going to be funding some of the strategies, and an advisor we used to run money for left the firm. So we're going to pick up, you know, a share on that business, but I had to get some of that stuff done. And it's just a constant struggle right now of prioritizing what needs to happen. You know, like Friday, you know, Tim and I did those two meetings, and he got commitments on about 800,000. And then we did another two meetings today and got another couple hundred thousand committed. So, you know, it's been four meetings with Tim in the last two half of work days, and, you know, it's $1 million coming in. So that's exciting, you know, so he's really kind of getting on it. And the other partners have been bringing me in. We had a couple of really nice wins where another advisor brought me in, and this guy's had outside money for a real long time. And one conversation with him, and he called back the next morning, and he's doing an in-service transfer and move over some of that money he hasn't been able to get. So that was exciting. And then, you know, Tim and I were working on some options for another client who's going to bring over another $7-8 million of concentrated stock, and we're going to get a another $1.5 million to write up, you know, to do some option writing on. And you know, it's just really trying to focus on making the meetings work, and there's just not enough time to do this the right way. And like I'm you know, I was talking to Tim about, and actually to Larry as well, about getting some of the, you know, getting Tim involved with some more relationships, and, you know, maybe cutting him in on some of the larger relationships to help with some of the children and family members and things like that. And, had a good conversation with Eric and with Julie, and with Larry about kind of identifying some people and getting a little bit more cross-pollination going within the team. And I think the team, you know, in our last strategy session meeting, I had a couple of real positive comments after the meeting, because I've been asking, I don't know, different types of questions or trying to frame the discussions to make it a little bit more applicable to the other advisors in the room. And I think that they're really kind of rallying behind that a little bit. So I think Eric tends to be a little bit technical, and he gives them a ton of information, but I'm kind of like, I'm the only one that has the balls to say, hey, how do we apply this? Yeah. You know, like if somebody walks in right now and gives us $1 million, what strategies are you deploying into, and how are you, you know, investing that capital? And like, apparently they've been going for like 10 years and nobody's ever asked that question in the meeting, whether they're scared to or not. I don't know, but, it's interesting to see kind of how some of the people have been reacting. It's going really well. I'd say, Thursday I'm going down to see this attorney, that's been trying to get in front of, and, I'm going to go see her new office and do lunch. And that's through a relationship with my father. She does the airboating, her and her husband do the airboating with him. And, Catholic attorney in South Florida, unicorn.
There's a few. I'm guaranteeing there's a few churches in South Florida.
I know. It's a different, different marketplace. A little bit closer to my hometown, and I used to live down that way. It's in Plantation, Weston area, if you're familiar with that that market. And she's established. She's got a couple of staff attorneys working under her. She's got plenty of business coming in, and there seemed to be an interest. I kind of gave her an out, saying like, look, if you've got too much business, you're not interested in you know, developing partnerships, that's fine. You know, like, I'm looking for people that are. And you know, she kind of reached back out to me to reinitiate. So I kind of let her take a little bit of, I wanted to see something from her, because I'm sick of chasing people around. So, there it goes. But getting out and seeing someone else, and then, you know, having a little bit more conversations with clients where they're identifying people that they want to introduce to me. Like, they're telling me, hey, I'm trying to get you in front of my best friend or this person who I know needs your services. And I'm trying to say, oh, you know, frame it the right way. Be like, look, you know, I would be honored to, you know, be able to, you know, help your friend out, or, you know, I'm not saying in the salesy manner, you know. So we're trying to get some type of, you know, line of communication established with a couple of these people. But we got set up on the Salesforce pipeline, so I think that's going to help me a lot to not forget about the people that are in the pipe. And I mean, I sat down, and without a lot of effort, I identified like 20 million, 30 million outside that I know is there. Just a question of, you know, spending the time and revisiting and trying to see how we can get that money moved over. But yes, it's just very much it's a constant struggle with time right now, constant struggle. But the money's flowing, you know, it's going really well, and there's a lot of opportunity with this group. And you
money
know,
flowing, opportunities there, but I think there's a lot of, more importantly, synergies there. Everybody feels good about everyone. And I think you feel better, at least I do, feel better that it's not just, quite frankly, it's not just you and me. You know, you got other people pulling in the same direction. You got a lot of people with the same thought in the process.
Right. And they're all doing good business, but they're also all individually financially established enough to where they're not greedy and trying to hold on to every little bit. You know, like they're very collaborative where, you know, like I had a conversation with Julie and said, hey, why the hell are you taking $500,000 accounts? You know, like she's going to do $1.5 million this year. You know, her response to me was she wants to get to $2 million. I was like, okay, you know, me too. But, you know, like, I'm like, do you think maybe if you, you know, I'm like, you're going to be picking up a couple $100,000 in revenue here from Alan's thing dropping off. I'm like, you know, maybe, you know, you can start pushing some more stuff towards Tim and towards Monique. And, you know, that'll free up your time to where you can start going after these clients. And I'm trying to bring it to her in a way that, like, I'm telling her, I'm like, with your financial planning capabilities, not to mention the fact that she's running her father's estate, which is probably in the $50 million range from what I'm gathering. You know, she's setting up, you know, different types of grantor trust and charitable remainders and like, and family foundations. And she's living it, you know, like most people can't even talk about it. And I'm like, you're doing these things. You've been on the board of the financial planning thing. I'm like, I relayed the story about my neighbor who ran circles around me at my dinner table, you know, talking about the financial planning aspect of things. She was an advanced planner for a high powered law firm. And now she's a director at a private wealth company, but all she does is advanced planning for rich people. So, you know, I'm talking to a friend and then like, she's like, oh, have you considered an intentionally defective defector trust? I'm like, oh, of course I did. You know, I just didn't get there yet, you know, you know, but, I told her, I'm like, if we can have you be that director of the team and do and actually do that, and if Larry or Barry or Tim or Dan or Howard comes into these types of cases, you could potentially help take a $2 million relationship and maybe we can get that outside $6 million that's at XYZ Trust Company. And then, you know, I'm pitching to Eric and to her saying, okay, look, if we have partnerships, then the people only participate on new incremental business that they gather. So I think that, you know, that idea is starting to get a little bit more traction as people are saying, like, for as fucked up as we were as a team, Larry, Barry, and I were extremely efficient at getting the person to the right person. And that was because we all got paid the same regardless of who worked it. So quite frankly, getting someone to someone else was less work for you and potentially better. So, you know, I think that this team having a different org structure and being a little bit more siloed, it's going to be a little bit of a slower adoption. But, you know, as Patty comes on board and she's, you know, I literally spent 3 hours going through a book and I found her $30,000-$40,000 of revenue, like that she has been sitting on for 25 years. Just, I'm like, hey, Patty, you know, do, 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 do. She's like, oh my God, that's a great idea. Let me make some calls. She makes some calls and like, you know, she's like, I got to get you more business. So you're giving me all this revenue. And I'm like, you know, yeah, but, you know, it's just, and we've got a lot of that. There's just so much that's probably not being properly worked, you know? So, I'm really pushing the other senior people to push stuff down to Tim and Monique. And I'm telling Eric, I'm like, we're going to be filling them up and we need to have more people coming on board. But he's always got six simultaneous plans going on and, you know, a couple of them could potentially hit, you know, he's talking to another team here and talking to another advisor here and, you know, talking to our managers there. And, you know, so I kind of have to step back a little bit where I can throw stuff out there and hopefully, some of it will stick, but you know, it's exciting, you know, to have the opportunity, you know, and like it's exciting for me to come in and like in the last 2 weeks, like I said, I did 4 points with Tim in 2 days, and then I had a 3 or 4 with Dan where we've converted over a couple million for him, and then you know, Julie's brought some more money on, and now I'm like, I'm kind of getting in that position where like, of like, I'm working a lot for or with other people, and I need to, and Eric's good about this where he's trying to force me. He's like, you need to build your practice too and focus on your stuff. But I think if my performance was better right now, then that would be easier. You know, like Tim had a retained account that, you know, wasn't thrilled about the performance over this year. And she kind of was able to be poached by this advisor that left a while ago. And if a great performance, I'm sure that wouldn't have been as likely. But, you know, just one of those things that I'm working on it, you know, trying to get better.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, you get lucky and sometimes you get unlucky. And, you know, it's performance over time. It's not necessarily how you're doing this quarter.
We realize that, but I can understand for a new relationship, maybe not getting started off on the right foot, it's a little challenging.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a, you know, the first quarter was a terrible quarter. You know, it was really hard.
It was my best quarter of the year.
Really?
I was ripping it up in the first quarter. Yeah, through March, I was up like 18 and 14, and just I was kicking ass and taking names. And then when the tech rotation, interest rate, value kind of went like flip-flop on me twice, that's where I got tripped up in that. Yeah, when growth really rolled over in April, that was my tripping zone, so to speak. So.
Anyway, so it sounds to me as though you are spending too much time on small accounts still.
Me?
Yep. And Tim, you need to now graduate.
Well, Tim's at the bottom of the hill right now, so he's getting pushed stuff that he doesn't necessarily crave, but...
Yeah, but I mean, look, you know, you said you had two meetings with Tim, and that's good. You know, four meetings, six meetings with Tim, where you're leading the meeting, that's enough.
No, he's leading the meetings, and I've made a conscious effort to back down on that. It was just more like... I think for him.
On Friday, I brought Ryan in for a little depth and breadth, and from an investment relationship.
No, that's good. Using him to close, using him to be the money manager.
That's all it was.
Yeah, as long as you're running the show, that's good. I misinterpreted. Good.
And I did bust his chops afterwards, as we all should be. That I probably could have closed it myself, but I'm glad that he was there to join in the victories with me.
Right. And the only thing I would say is, yeah, at this point, don't use him until it's north of a million or something. Just pick a line that you guys can agree on. Just because.
Well, the one that I brought him in because it was it was 500 funding on the line. And then this guy's got a multi-million dollar business that he's looking to exit in the next 12 to 18 months. And so, you know, my confidence is sometimes my biggest issue. And I, you know. Maybe Tim 2 years ago would have been like, screw it. I'm just going to go in there and, you know, get this thing done. But I took a step back and wanted to include either Larry or Ryan. And Larry was out of the office. So, I thought it was the best idea to not get that one off the hook. When it was so
yeah, but I was on the phone for 3 minutes, Rob, and this guy's down in Miami. And I was talking to Miami with him, and I instantly – just from where he lived, I knew he had juice. And then I could start talking to him. And then he's like, oh, he used to run – Burger King's international division or something like, and I was like, oh, even the headquarters off Blue Lagoon down there by the airport. He's like, oh yeah, da da da. And it's, I'm like, oh, where do you live? He's like, oh, I'm down by, you know, where the, you know, Dateland is. I'm like, yeah, my friend works in the Datran building right there on, you know, like it was good to have some of that.
It's okay. You guys, you know your business. Yeah. And you're smart. I'm just trying to help.
The other thing that Tim hasn't had it, Tim has not had a lot of in-person meetings in the last year, you know, to kick this thing off. You know what I mean? Like coming from the where he's come from. So with him, a lot of it is we're working on language and working on just, you know, having a more relaxed and, you know, maybe calming demeanor and not using as much industry jargon, because he tends to communicate as if he's talking to an institutional client. And it's a little bit of a different experience with a lot of the individuals, you know, and like Larry's really good at projecting that confidence and that you know, that gravitas, so to speak, as opposed to kind of, you know, coming across a little bit intense or jittery or hyped up, you know, with and that's kind of just, I think, you know, like Tim said, maybe it's just confidence or maybe it's, you know, but you haven't got to have a lot of in-client meetings here to kick off the career. Like when I got started, I was able to sit in on a bunch of meetings with Larry and Barry, and I got to see their styles and pick up phrases and, you know, have a little bit more of a ramp, you know. Unfortunately with COVID, it's like, I don't know, you know, how many people have started their career like this, not to mention he won't stop getting his wife pregnant, you know, so do you tell Rob, Tim?
It's a major detractor lately.
Yeah. So
Tim, the Ford crowd.
Yeah, Tim's got working on a basketball team here.
you gotta make the grandparents happy.
That's right.
lot going on. But sorry, we cut you off a little bit there, Rob. But are you just saying that Tim should have more solo meetings and see sink or swim how it goes?
I think yeah. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, I can tell from Tim that, you know, your style is pretty, you know, pretty intense, and learning to listen and be relaxed and to enjoy the people and to not worry about what you're going to say, you know. It just takes time and it takes a lot of meetings, and practice. So if you're learning and it's working, then fine. Keep doing it and learning and growing. I'm just, you know, cause we started out saying how jammed up Ryan is. And the next thing I hear is he's meeting, you know, doing meetings with you. And I didn't hear 2 million. I heard 200,000 and 500,000. But then you fill me in and say that they're going to be huge clients. So that's, you know, you got it. You're good. Keep doing it. Ryan, closing. Okay. Closing for the appointment, closing for the introduction. Okay. I didn't hear you saying, look, you know your friend better than I do. How would you suggest that we meet? Okay, remember that is brilliant phrase, and you need that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and they're not going to know, and so you're going to then suggest, okay? So how would you suggest that we meet? Not how would you suggest that you, you know, have him call me. I want to meet him. So how would you suggest that we meet?
Well, both of these are in New York, unfortunately, and on the one, I did mention that, you know, we have a regular presence up there and, you know, rattled off some of the cities in Long Island that we're working with. But yes, to your point,
okay,
I'm sitting here racking my brain on how do I get that intro. Okay.
So here's what you say is, how would you suggest that we meet? And he said, well, you're in Florida and we're in New York. And you say, well, I think a Zoom call would be terrific. Would that work for you? And he goes, yeah, that would be fine. And then you go, today is, what is today? Oh, today's Monday, right? Give him a chance for him to get his calendar straight in his head. Okay. So today's Monday. It's 3:00. When will you see him or when will you have the ability to talk to him? Well, I'll talk to him this week. Okay. So why don't we tentatively set it up for this time next week? Say 3:00 next week. Would that work? He goes, yeah, that would work. Okay, so today's Monday. Why don't I give you till Friday to set this up? Oh, by the way, I'll set it up, okay? I'll set it up. You just get me his information and my team will set it up. Good, okay. So you get me, you know, you talk to him, make sure it's going to work, get me his information. If I don't hear from you, say by Friday, I'll reach out again and remind you. Is that okay? Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So would you at that point send him a Zoom invite?
No.
For next week?
I don't have it set up yet.
Okay.
I wait for him. To confirm that he has the time to talk to his clients and we have it, then I would set up the Zoom call.
Okay, but I mean, if you send him an invite, a Zoom invite, you're giving him, you're kind of saying, hey, our team set this up and he's going to confirm back with the other guy and then you're going to put the other.
Yeah, but I don't want to, I mean, if he's not going to actually do it, then I don't want to throw it in his face. I mean, he's agreed to this. He's going to tell me and get me his friend's information. And then I'm going to set up the as soon as I get that from him. And remember, I still have control, right? Because I said, if I don't hear from you by Friday, I'll reach out to you. So I'm still in control. So Friday comes along. I haven't heard from him. It's noontime. I reach out. I can call him. I can email him. I can text him. I can do whatever. Okay. Is it always going to work? No, but it's a good, you maintain control. Probabilities are good. It's going to work. Monday morning. I still haven't heard. I'm going to call him. Are we going to do this at 3:30? You know, I'd love to do it. I haven't been able to get into control. Okay, let's make it for next week, next Monday at 3:30. Is that a good time for you? Yes. I'll give you another week to get this done and then, you know. So you're constantly in control of the situation. At this point, Ryan isn't in control of any of this.
No, exactly. And these people are not really prospects. They're suspects. You know, like I know they have money, but I'm not. I'm not able to access it.
Yeah, and just tell them that. Look, this isn't a solicitation. This is an introduction to see if we are going to be a good fit with each other.
Right.
Well, just to see if we have something that we can do some business. If not, great. We move on. But what I find is that this is the piece. Everybody will get, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'll have him call you. And they never hear from him. Right. Or I'm going to give this guy your name. He'll call you. Or I'm going to call him. We'll see. And nothing happens. Right. It's 70-80% of the time that happens and nothing happens.
Correct.
So you're basically here. You're doing a couple of things. One, you're saying I'm a pro. I'm not wasting my time. Okay. You said you'd do this. I'm holding you accountable. Because my time is valuable. I got to have this set up. Yeah. Right?
So.
That way you get rid of the bullshitters.
Yeah.
Right? How many are bullshitters? I got a guy. Yeah, this is dead and really. If he knows you're going to hold him accountable to it, he's not going to, you'll get rid of that stuff quick. It'll only be real people.
Oh yeah, no. These two are particularly. It's two clients that love me, and it's two of their closest friends, and neither one is working with an advisor or has a very weak advisor relationship. Where, you know, there's gonna be some more assets coming. You know, just, you know, some of it. I wish they were in town. It'd be a lot easier to get in front of. So I like the line, you know, how would you suggest that we meet? And then just with this, particularly with this older client, like this guy's 85, but he is tech savvy. He worked at IBM many years. And then he worked in the legal field. Like he got a law degree and then worked in the legal field after he retired. And now he was consulting back for IBM. So I know this guy's got some juice, and knowing this lady and her husband, you know, I'm sure that this is a $3 to $4 million opportunity minimum, you know. So for her, she's not real aggressive. She's kind of just, you know, Long Island grandma, you know, pretty soft-spoken. But she told me, like, this guy's name's Marty, his wife's Roberta. You know, like, I got the whole backstory. She thinks that they should talk to me. I positioned her, like, saying, you know, like, I understand Marty does stuff himself, but what happens if something happens to him? You know, like, Roberta's going to be very vulnerable at that point in time. The kids apparently are pretty good professionals, but neither one of them are financial advisors, so to speak. I offered the 90-day free look and told her about that process, how they could give me a trial run for 90 days. I could talk to him about his investments. We could have monthly calls. And I did pitch all of that. I don't want you to think I'm like, oh, okay, you got a friend. Great. Talk to you later.
No, I understand. But, I think you just have to guide her. And she's not, you know, how would you suggest that we meet? Be prepared for her not to have a clue. Okay?
Right.
So you got to give a multiple choice question then. You know, I think Zoom would be best, but we could do a conference call. And then I think, you know, I could always fly up there. Oh, you don't need to fly up there. Okay. Let's do the conference call. Let's do the Zoom.
All right. And I'm going to ask for Barry since he can't be bothered, but, he got a referral from a very close client of his, and they brought in a couple million, and I went and visited with them also, and their daughter is really rich, like she is like the CFO for Michael Kors or something like that, like a huge public, you know, operation. You know, like she's basically like sending her nephew to college because she's got nothing else to do with her money, kind of thing. How do you suggest, you know, or when you're going after these people, like clearly she's in New York, clearly she's loaded. I'm sure there's other financial people in the picture. How would you suggest trying to, you know, get an intro or, you know, a target to somebody like this? Is it just like when she's in town for the holidays? But that's kind of a tough time to get in. You know, what do you think the best path to just talking to this person would be?
I don't have a clue, but they have the answer.
They do. Okay.
Right. You're asking.
How would you suggest? How would you suggest that we meet? I just. All right.
Right. Yeah. I just think it's, you got nothing to lose. They know better than anybody else.
Knowing Manko, he'll rear end her at the airport somehow with his car, like run her over and then, like, you know, meet her in the hospital.
Save her.
Exchanging insurance information.
Right. A near death experience, and he'll come along and bring her back with mouth to mouth.
Yeah. No, he'd actually be walking on his, he'd be walking on it, looking at his phone. He'd trip and his knee would hit her chest and revive her. That's how it would work. She'd come to and he'd be standing over her looking bewildered. You saved me. Oh, God.
You know, I just would say, you know, busy people sometimes don't get a chance to do the planning that they need to do. That's what, you know, we specialize in busy people that have done very well and help them to take the time to plan their lives a little better.
Okay.
And the parents would go, oh, that'd be great, because she doesn't have a clue. She's running like a crazy person. That's the truth. Just because somebody's got a big job and a lot of money doesn't mean they're getting great financial advice. And all you're going to do is find out if she needs you, right?
Right.
She doesn't need you, and they have their own commercial financial planning firm, right, that takes care of everybody, then good.
And then another question I have is, I think for most of my career, up until recently, I guess, I viewed any person with money as someone that could be a client, so to speak. And I think that, like, something that Eric's real big on is that we work with the right type of people, you know, or I'm hearing this more from Duncan and I guess some of the stuff that we've talked about as well. But, like, I think part of me needs to accept that not everyone would make a great client. You know, like, I met this guy who's got $1 million and he's 40 years old and he's in private real estate doing these big high-rise buildings in Miami and, you know, coordinating the deals and all that stuff. And he wants to, you know, find some stuff that's not correlated to real estate, which, by the way, pretty much everything's, you know, correlated in some fashion to real estate because, you know, it's – but, I mean, like, he's a tough one. You know, he's doing his own option writing, and he's got buddies that are analysts in Wall Street, and the guy's not stupid. And it's like, I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to wow him with anything that, that he thinks is the cat's meow, you know, like.
Well, I just hired JP Morgan. You know, I spend a lot of time, hours and hours and hours on investments.
Mm-hmm.
And I hired JP Morgan to manage my, you know, part of my value management stuff because I don't have time. I mean, I can put it in the index, but I expect them to outperform the index and we'll see how they do. But
people, what was that line that you said, Rob, that was great? Busy people sometimes forget to do stuff themselves, or you just said it not long ago. Busy people sometimes forget to plan for themselves.
They don't have the time to work on planning. We specialize in busy people.
Right. They don't. I mean, and plus, guess what? Guess who's going to be in charge of their estate? And does she know who you are? Don't you think you should meet her? I mean, I'm managing your parents' money. Don't you think you should meet me?
Yeah.
Right?
But what are your thoughts on that? Like, someone with $10 million, you know, like, do you ever say, look at someone and be like, they're just not going to get it, or, you know, like, they're not going to value.
I expect everybody that I talk to is going to get it, and they're going to be smart, mm-hmm. and I'm going to get the outcome I want.
Okay.
Let them tell me no. I don't make up ideas of why they wouldn't do business with me. I'm going to assume they will.
And if they don't, it's their loss.
It's their problem. It's like going into a golf tournament expecting to lose. All the reasons that I'm not going to, the wind, I'm not good in wind. It's raining. I'm not good in rain. You know, you got to go into every golf tournament. And by the way, you can't win the tournament if you don't enter.
Oh, no. I did lunch with this guy. Like, you know, I've had a couple of phone conversations. I've done lunch with this guy and I'm what's the way to say it? I'm not seeing it right, or I'm not connecting right, or something's off with this. It's weird. Like, I normally don't come out of like talking to someone for 2 hours, not really understanding how I can help them. You know, other than saying, you know, give me money and I'll invest into the market for you. Like,
well, like, ask Jim. I mean, he's the only one that knows. How do you think I could help you?
Right. No, I did. And, you know, that's why he's kind of like, he didn't seem like he was real keen on stocks as much as he knows he's got a lot of exposure to real estate. And I've been trying to find some that's inversely correlated to real estate. And the only thing that's really been inversely correlated to real estate is like long bonds, which, hey, yeah, right. Yeah. Give me a bunch of money to buy some long bonds right now. So, you know, I was trying to talk, I was trying to look at like some, you know, some hedge fund stuff or, you know, just, but it's hard. Like, you know, and someone like him that's real data driven, you know, when he wants to talk about strategies and stuff, like a lot of our strategies that we run have not been formalized so long that I have like this track record. I can talk about how this did in 2008 or how this did then, you know.
How old is he?
He's 40.
So
38, 37. Sorry, he's not even 40.
I mean,
kid's making $1 million a year.
Theoretically, a guy like that is a perfect guy for private equity.
Yeah.
What about Alkeon?
You pick a private, I mean, I don't do private, I did, you know, I don't do private equity, but if I was young, I would. If I had 5, 10, 15, 20 year increments, you can do private equity and it's not correlated to real estate, and it's probably not correlated to anything.
What about Eric's strategies?
That's what I ended up sending him.
Okay.
So I could show a track record. But yeah, but all these real estate guys, you have to understand they're terrified of losing their liquidity. You know, and unfortunately, that's the one big drawdown we have with the private equity is that we get no margin release, no lending on it. Like, that money is tied up.
Right.
And for him, this guy's.
But he ties up his money for 5 years, you know?
Maybe.
Sure.
Yeah, but a lot of private equity deals now are like 9 to 12. After 2008, they backed him up.
But anyway, like you said, you're not going to convince everybody that, real estate is a difficult competitor. The people that are in real estate generally are difficult until they get ready to retire, difficult to compete with. They just think differently, And so they're comfortable putting, having leverage of 10 to 1 and owning $10 million of real estate, and they think they're not, they come in and they buy they buy Amazon and they think it's speculating,
Right.
So you just don't waste your time. Keep moving.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to develop some relationships. I ran into a guy at one of my daughter's parties who's actually friends with him as well. They lived in the same community and plays tennis, and this other guy is really enjoying playing tennis. So I'm thinking about kind of slow playing it a little bit. And
you can also consider him a center of influence potentially.
Right.
Commercial real estate is a wonderful place to identify people with wealth. So you can never do business with him. Just teach him what you do and how you do it. And then use him as a center of influence and hammer him though.
Yeah, his best friend and best man at his wedding is my neighbor, whose wife is with that private wealth firm. So when he asked my friend who he should talk to, he didn't want to talk to his wife. He's trying to talk to some other people. So there's a chance for some social aspect there.
Yeah, but. I think commercial realtors really know the market. They know the people. They know where the money is. They're always talking to work, just like you are.
This guy works with a real estate development group. He's not a realtor. He buys office buildings and they retain interest in the office building, a private REIT.
They're still looking for investors,
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. They got 10 investors that they go to when they were going to do a building, and they all put in $1 million, and then they're in our business to a certain degree.
What about lending stuff for him, Ryan?
I don't know. He's not doing it with his money. He works for Crocker Partners, Larry. So they're buying those giant office buildings on the water in Miami and stuff like that. He just coordinated a $300 million deal for Biscayne Towers East, and they're going to be, it's like the Bank of America building in Miami, and they're going to be keeping, a retained interest in it, but Blackstone or someone else is now going to be the operating partner. They're doing, it's big stuff.
Right. Well, we're out of time. Good going. I think you're rocking and rolling. We're talking about, we're not talking about stuff we used to talk about. We're talking about moving forward with good ideas. Right?
Yeah.
So stay in traffic, keep busy, see a lot of people.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you.